just like dive right in.
Yeah, so. Let's shoot it.
Okay. This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Ian Unser. Hey, it's great to talk with you.
It's great to talk to you. And I'm very happy to, you know, be here with you today.
Oh, we've got a lot to talk about. This soundtrack that you've just released for Eagle Flight, it's been nominated for the Best VR Game Score from the Canadian Video Game Awards. So congratulations about that.
Thank you very much. It means a lot. And I'm happy that just in general, VR is such a new, I'd say, like, newcomer to the video games world. And I see that, you know, in the beginning, people really didn't know how to eat it and like, oh, what kind of a... But right now, I see how it's starting to inch and go higher and sort of like merge with a more mainstream of gaming, which is really great news.
Yeah, it's been interesting to kind of watch it evolve because you could kind of tell that in the very beginning, the developers didn't really know what to do with this incredible development, this gift, and now with Eagle Flight especially, it seems like they're really getting much more sophisticated about their designs.
Yeah, things are definitely coming together. The thing about VR is, and I think in the beginning, people tend to sort of like create a game and then adapt it to VR. In Eagle Flight, they started the other way around. They started with the VR aspect and then brought from this point of view, created the game. And that's why the game just feels way more cohesive. It feels very natural. And it feels that VR is basically the only way to play this game. It's not that you're putting, like a movie could be a 3D or a 2D, you know? In this thing, VR basically becomes a style rather than just a technique.
Yeah, no, it's neat. And I'd love to know what some of the challenges were for you writing the music for an open world VR game rather than just a typical open world game.
So it's a great question because we had a lot of conversation. In fact, so in VR, you have the same elements, sound effects, Foley, dialogue, everything. But since the depth of the 3D, then the mix basically is way more active, and you could hear stuff above you and below you and behind you and all sort of things. But this is part of the reality. But the music, it's not part of the reality. The music actually is a different layer. It's the emotional layer, it's the story layer, it's what you need to feel and not really what you need to hear. So basically, if the music just stays in your head all the time and not all around you like the other sound, then it needs to be written traditionally and mixed traditionally in stereo. So I said, all right, well, let's give it a try. And in fact, the outcome was great. Because now, since all the sound effects and everything is mixed in total surround and it's very active and things are whooshing from up to down to left to right and things are like all over the place, but the music stays in the same very special place that you have in your mind, it actually helps the separation of the music from the sound effect. So not only, you know, we didn't have to do anything specific. We actually made a contrast not to do something that is different than what we're doing for a regular game. But the outcome was even greater as far as, you know, the sonic, relationships between the music and the other sonic elements.
Oh, that's such a cool way of thinking about it and designing it, because I know one of the issues that VR games have had, although it sounds like Eagle Flight kind of solved this, is people getting kind of motion sickness. And so the way that they did it was to have the eagle beak as a constant on the screen. And it sounds like maybe your music was kind of helping to ground people too, or at least keep them centered as they're playing the game.
Yeah, I would really think more about that the music is basically inside you. And wherever you go, the music is with you. And if you turn right or left or up and down, it doesn't really matter. The music needs to support the story that you're going through and not where you are right now and what you're doing. And this is the big difference.
Yeah, oh no, it's so neat. Actually, we should probably back up and explain about the concept of the game because it's really interesting. It's set in a post-apocalyptic Paris, but instead of being filled with mutants and radioactivity and stuff, it's animals and it's foliage and it's absolutely gorgeous. And you play as an eagle, which is just an amazing concept.
I know. And when I heard first, the concept, I was like, wow. I mean, it is so interesting, because there is the sort of like the epicness of Paris and on its own, but it also has like a new sort of like aspects that can be all, achieved by doing few things in the music. So, I mean, the way basically I went, about it is this. All right. So we have Paris, but it's not the Paris we know. Okay. And we have animals and greeneries and stuff, but it's not the situation we actually know. Okay. We don't have a time frame of when it happened or what. And we're flying also. So what the hell, the composers should do. So I basically took three elements and combined them. The first element is sort of like the adventure and sort of like epicness of the view. And nothing could do it better than the symphonic orchestra. The soaring strings, the brass, and all that, it really supporting, this element of adventure and epic scenery. The other aspect was the flying, and but when you fly, you're not like an airplane, or you're like an eagle. And then right away I was thinking about vocals, but not like operatic vocals, but more like wild vocal. And I invited Early Brighton and Mimi Page, who made an amazing performance on the tracks and sort of like gave it a special signature. And that supported to me sort of like the whole flying elements, but flying as a bird. And the last one was sort of like the ground underneath us, which is primitive, which is deserted, but it's beautiful. It's very primitive. So I brought on board like tribal beats and tribal percussions and influence. And then I combined the whole thing, shuffled it, and this is the score.
No, it's neat. And what I noticed about it is, since there are no people in this version of Paris anymore, there's just the animals. It's like you've kind of left the structure of, you know, first world music, European music behind, and instead it's got this wonderful kind of raw and native quality to it with
like it's not to say that we didn't try. We did try accordion, I swear to you. But it just didn't work. Because we want to say that Paris here is to serve a different purpose. Paris here is to serve a beauty of the past. So it could have been Prague, and it could have been other places. There is no real sort of like pivot to the story that it is Paris, except of that Paris is so gorgeous and so beautiful that if to do something like that, it better be in Paris.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I love how in one of the tracks in particular, Wild Sky, you actually even wove in some like really distant echoes of church bells, which just gives such a nice feel, and they're kind of like, oh yeah, I remember when there were people in Paris.
Exactly. We thought about it, and I must commend Benedict Guimet, the audio director from Ubisoft, and Mathieu Ginsan, who is the audio implementer and also audio director. Both of them did an amazing job guiding me through the whole thing. And we tried to weave here and there some kind of a reminiscence of either Paris or even French heritage. One of the tracks I really did sort of like a little tribute to Ravel and Debussy with the, you know, with the harmonic structure. So all these things are very subtle, and they're behind, and you don't really notice it, but they are there. So you don't feel totally disconnected to the fact that this is Paris.
Yeah, no, it's neat, and I could hear that, and I also heard your favorite instrument, the piano, which is, you know, heavily modified again, like you did for Fallout 4, but it just adds a nice, really kind of undertone to the music.
Yeah, we liked it more than what we thought in the beginning. It's like, all right, let me, you know, I really like it, so let me try to do something with it. And I mean, they really picked up on it, and Benedict told me like, hey, you know, let's use it from time to time because it is so airy and it feels warm, friendly, and there is something almost majestic about it. So let's just, you know, be selective, but, you know, play it from time to time.
Well, yeah, and all the way through everything, there is a kind of an economy to your arrangements and the way you use the instruments. And even Mimi and Airely, their voices are more like instruments that you should drop in occasionally rather than having this, you know, beautiful but constant wall of the singing. So it's just a nice mix of everything.
Yeah, I was thinking about it more like a calls. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more like a primitive calls that you think you will hear or make yourself during this flight. And there's something very cool about this tribal, you know, eruptions of vocal that are there and gives the whole thing sort of like a very signature, I guess, style for this.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Airely, I said she's got this real talent for making up languages on the spot. Did she do that in this recording?
No, actually, no. We we kept it very simple vocals, and we didn't want to put any something that sounds like language because we are in animal world. At one point, I remember I did like some sort of like experiment, and with another singer, we wrote like a few lyrics in French,
Ooh.
and she sang it, she performed it, and they didn't like it. They didn't dig it at all. It's like, no, let's stay away from language. We should be on really just the calls kind of a thing. And which comes to teach you that during the course of writing music for any project, there's a lot of sort of like hit and miss and experimentation that comes along. And I always try different things, and then if they like it, great. And if no, but I don't like really to always stay on safe ground.
Yeah, no, and that's what makes it exciting too, is when you can kind of push your boundaries and just give them the thing that you think might be really extreme and not sure if it works, and then they're all like, yeah, okay. And it sounds like Ubisoft has really got that attitude anyway with other games that they've made as well, not just this one.
Ubisoft always pushing the boundaries and pushing the envelope, but it is definitely something that we think about, like, what will the player think? So you need to think about it from sort of like the perspective of a player. And I always say, if you want to be original, then do it only 10% or 15% or 20%. So basically bring something that will be sort of like an ear candy, but you build it on top of something that the player can relate to. And this is what we did also on this one.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. And one of the things that I love best about games is that anything is possible. I mean, just all these things that anyone can imagine. I mean, did you ever imagine that you would be writing music for little bird combat, for example?
I know, but this is the beauty of it. And I remember when they called me first and I came to Montreal and I played the game, I totally got it. And that was like even a preliminary, time in the game. It was like almost a year ago.
Yeah, I bet. So you were brought in pretty early in the development so that you could evolve the music while the game was kind of evolving itself too.
Yeah, and it almost happened accidentally. I was invited by my agent, Jeremy Villequette, who used to be for many years the head of audio at Ubisoft, and then decided to represent composers. And he's representing me, and he invited me to Montreal to meet a few people. And there was a party there that, like, many people came, and I basically bumped into Mathieu. And we talked, and what are you doing? Because Mathieu did all the Assassin's Creed, so he's very advanced guy. And so we talked. I was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And then he said, "You know what? I have a little project here. Not sure what to do with it, And it's like, tell me what is it? And it's like, all right, here it is. And it's like, just sign me in. It sounds so exciting. Just sign me in, and everything worked out great. But this was almost accidental, my involvement in this game.
That's so funny. I've only seen eagles flying in the wild just a couple of times. There's a place on the Hudson where there's a big bluff, and I can occasionally see them. And what's interesting about them, what I love about them, is that there's this amazing combination of the stillness of them when they're just soaring and then the power when they're like really flying. And did you spend a lot of time watching eagles just to kind of get ideas for the music, or not so much?
Well, first we have a lot of hawks actually flying around our house, and like some of them are huge, and I love watching them. But the thing that I'm getting more than anything else about them is a confident. You know, they have confident in themselves. They have confident in the wind. They have confident in the air. They just basically, you know, ruling it without, you know, in kind of a nonchalant way. And no matter how high you think you are, they will always be above. And that's the feel. So it's nothing too arrogant, but there is some sort of like a very, you know, I'd say robust power and strong, confident, in almost a regal way about them.
Yeah, definitely. And your music is astonishing because there is so much forward motion in it. There's a real sense of impulsion, and it really kind of goes with the freedom of the game. And it just seems like you've really encapsulated that confidence and power and just the soaring quality of it with like the long melodies and the pieces that are in like a three beat. There's a real like forward thrust to it.
There's a lot of sort of like you know, 3-4 cues there, and yeah, the reason why, there's not a specific reason. I mean, it's just a feel kind of a thing. But for me, the flight, you know, I mean, the 3-4 sort of like continuous beat just really gives this kind of a flying feel better than the 4-4. Some of like, if it's more like battle-like and action, then 4-4 is great. But for flying and stuff, I found that the 3-4 really supports and enhancing it so beautifully. Then I used it definitely more than a few times.
Yeah, no, it's great, and it has made driving down the Merritt Parkway so much more enjoyable, because even though I'm sort of stuck in crawling traffic, I just feel like, well, if I could just get up
so
above.
You love it. I mean, we worked on it so much, but you know, when somebody like you says it, it just means a lot, because you know, this is why we do this thing. We do it so people can enjoy it. And when somebody specifically that has, you know, sort of like this artistic credentials like you, and understanding, is saying like this, and then this is it. I mean, I'm so happy and thrilled. And I'm sure that Benedict and Matthew, who helped me also a lot with the artistic directions and fixes and everything, would love to hear that you like the music. It'll mean so much for them.
Oh, well, it's been a great opportunity for me, because I don't have a VR yet, so I'm sort of experiencing vicariously, but it's been fantastic. And Enon, as always, it has just been so much fun to talk with you.
Same here, Kate. And yeah, I mean, let's just do it again soon.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you've got lots of other projects in the hopper, right? So we'll definitely have another chance.
We probably next year we'll talk a little bit about Siberia.
Oh, but that sounds interesting. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Enon.
Thank you so much, and talk to you soon.